my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
The guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey everyone, episode 250 of my 1-2-3 cents, and it is the first Monday of a new month. Happy Labor Day, by the way. And it is time for another installment of Two is Greater Than One. My co-host, who also happens to be my tag team partner now in Stride Pro Wrestling. Yes, go ahead, laugh. Heath Hatton. Heath, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what's going on?
So this month, we're going to talk about tag team wrestling, kind of premised around the fact that we had a big show out at Rent One Park in Marion with the Southern Illinois Miners. What are your initial thoughts on doing an outdoor show like that? There's obviously a lot of variables, and with doing it on a school night during the week, there was a lot of, I think, a little bit of nervousness, at least, with the weather, and then will fans stick around because there was a baseball game in between the matches?
I thought the setup was really cool mm-hmm. for our company as far as getting to do the on-the-field stuff and Farmer Billy Hill's doing a game on the board. Mm-hmm. So that was real neat for me, for them getting to do that stuff. I mean, it was Magnifico probably told me 20 times that he was having so much fun, just how much fun he was having. As far as doing outdoor shows, I don't really like doing them because, like, when it's hot, mm-hmm. you know, like, I mean, I remember Christopher last year was just miserable when it was like 100 degrees outside.
Yes.
And you can't ever judge on the weather. So I'm not a big outdoor person. And also, it's really hard to judge the crowd noise. And it's like, I don't know, it just seems, it's just a different feel when you're mm-hmm. outside. And I don't know, I haven't really been to a whole lot of outdoor shows. I know you guys have been to probably WrestleManias that were mm-hmm. outside. I don't know, from a fan's perspective, if it's different.
You know, I think the setup is obviously much different because when you're in a stadium, you know, it's like going to a football game or whatever. You're, even though you're outside, it doesn't really feel like you're outside. Obviously, in Southern Illinois, when we do an outdoor show, like you mentioned, Christopher, and I've been to the DuQuoin State Fair where they've done shows as well. You know, you have that, you know, you're sitting outside, and if it rains, you're going to get wet. And if something happens, you know, there's no protection, so to speak. But when you have a crowd, because it kind of harkens back to the WCW days when they would record their TV tapings at Disney, and there weren't always wrestling fans. It was people coming inside, getting out from the heat of the park. Obviously, Thursday night at Rent One Park, we had our hardcore fans came out and supported, but we also had a lot of new faces, people that came for the ball game and maybe stuck around and watched the wrestling. Do you find it challenging to present the stories? Because obviously Thursday's show was building up to a lot of different stories kind of culminating that night. So it seemed like everyone had a good time, whether they were a regular Stride fan or people who were there for the very first time.
Well, I thought the way that we set up the matches, they'd be easy to grasp what was going on. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty obvious after the show was all the title matches. Mm-hmm. We did have a title match before, but it was a ladder match, which is pretty self-explanatory. And then Axe and Riser, even though there's a story there, it was pretty much, you know, just a match. Mm-hmm. So it was just a basic match. And then, you know, he challenged them to a match later on. So, you know, as far as that, I mean, I think we do a good job, and the guys that work for us do a good job of keeping the story going, but also allowing the crowd to know what exactly is going on.
I would concur with that. Now, let's kind of break down some of the match, or we can break down all the matches because we have nothing but time here. So we were treated to a birthday party, Brian Richards and El Magnifico at the very beginning. And then that kind of turned into an impromptu match with El Magnifico beating Brian Richards. And these two have a long history when it was the beard versus the mask. And how important are characters in wrestling in general? Because Brian Richards, we've seen kind of evolve from, you know, kind of just a plain Jane character to Brian Richards, the bodyguard for Dexter Roswell, to now where he's this better than butter, and I think he's calling himself beautiful Brian Richards now.
Brian Richards, like, I mean, he's just, he makes me laugh, mm-hmm. and I always tell him he always has a spot on my show as long as he can make me laugh, mm-hmm. and Brian Richards would tell you he's not an amazing wrestler, but when he trained, I mean, you can ask, you know, Red Daniels or Garrett or Dexter, anybody. I mean, I pushed him because he would make me so mad. And he would, but he would come back, and I mean, he had the roughest time training. It took him the longest to graduate, but he always came back. And any idea I've came at him, whether it was the bodyguard or the RWO, he's just happy to do it, and he gets it that he's funny, mm-hmm. and that the crowd wants to laugh at him. And so whatever you give him, he goes out and he tries his hardest to make it work. And you know, and some of the ideas he has are, you know, bad. But I mean, I can, the early days of him being the security, mm-hmm. for Dexter Roswell, I mean, he was hilarious. Yeah. I mean, he reminded me of Damian Sandow when he was The Miz's assistant. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just was this goofy guy, and then he just, you know, he to me, the crowd recognizes him when he comes out, and he's not like somebody who they're like, oh, but when he comes out, they recognize him, and they know he's probably going to lose. They know he's not going to be very, you know, he's not going to give you a 5-star, you know, WrestleMania main event match, but he's going to entertain you, which works for our show.
And yeah, obviously a big important part of that is being entertaining and having that character. Now, how much of it is guys coming up and the women now, as we're going to talk about in a few minutes, how much of it is their ideas and influence versus your creative and your ideas and your direction for these characters? Because, you know, we've heard on other podcasts where they always say, you know, Vince McMahon wants people to grab that brass ring, so to speak, but there's obviously limitations to that. So how important in our locker room is it for talent to have ideas for their own characters? Because you're managing 20 different individuals and telling stories, and you don't necessarily have the time to develop those characters. They have to kind of put some energy into that as well.
Well, I think I have a good relationship with everybody. So if I come up with an idea or I think of an idea, I call them, and I may call them on a Tuesday and be like, hey, I have this idea. This is what I'm thinking. And I'll present it to them and tell them to kind of run with it. And then sometimes they'll call me back and they'll say this, or I'm thinking this, and I'll tell them, you know, yes or no. And, you know, like, I mean, I came up with the idea for Me and You, mm-hmm. gosh, back in like February, right. We hadn't even done the Iron Man yet. And so I had laid it all out to Tony and Spade, you know, back in February. This is what I want to do. And mm-hmm. then I kind of called you, and, you know, I joked with you and said that, you know, the only way I was doing it was if I could beat you at the end of it and end your, you know. But so a lot of it is I come up with ideas, or I think, or I'll have guys, you know, call me and they'll say, you know, I have this idea, and they'll send it to me. And then at that point, like, that's probably the most difficult part I've come up with booking, and that I think a lot of other people on indies have failed, is I spend a lot of time thinking, you know, if Garrett or Dexter Roswell and Farmer have a feud, when they end their feud, Dexter has to go somewhere, Farmer has to go somewhere, and they all have to go somewhere, mm-hmm. and they all have to kind of be on top, and or at least look credible. So it's very difficult to find finishes, find ways to end stuff, and then move them on. And that's been, I think, what's been great about our locker room. From day one, I've told them, this is what I want to do. I want to tell stories, and I want to develop characters, and I want, you know. And so right now, you know, we're working on Dexter Roswell wants to do a different type of character, and so we're gonna, you know, so we've been working on that for 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. So that is how long it takes, because you can't just send out, like, okay, here's a new character. He's no longer, you know, here's, you know, what was it? Was it Berlin or whatever in WCW? What was his name?
The Wall? Or no. Are you talking about Alex Wright?
Yeah. What was
it? Yeah, I think it was Berlin.
Yeah, where he was just all of a sudden 1 week he was Alex Wright dancing, and 2 weeks later he was, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't do that. It doesn't work. And so we, you know, that's kind of been the direction I try to go, mm-hmm. is give me an idea, and then I'll try to figure out how I can make it work. And then I got to call the person that you're wanting to do it with and make sure that they can make it work and they want to make it work.
And I would imagine, too, that there are a lot of, you know, this is obviously not a nationally known company like AEW or WWE or even Ring of Honor. So we're not doing weekly events, and these guys aren't under contract. And sometimes there's baseball games or weddings or class reunions or whatever it is that may prevent them from being at a monthly show. So there's a lot of factors that go into this, not just the talent themselves, but then their availability as well.
Yeah, I mean, I nobody's under contract. Nobody has to be there. I've never got mad at anybody who can't do a show, mm-hmm. Unless they do it. They cancel the day of. And yeah. Sometimes it happens. I mean, I think Bo, you know, a couple shows ago had an emergency and he couldn't make it. Stuff like that. But if you constantly cancel and you constantly can, then it becomes an issue. Mm-hmm. I can't tell a story with you.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, we're pretty easygoing. I don't really care. I use a lot of local guys anyway.
Right.
And so we don't really have that problem.
Yeah, that's one thing I definitely enjoy and have noticed that is different from other indie companies that I've worked with in the past or that are currently around in our region. Next match is that big 10-man ladder match for the No Limits Championship. Now, we introduced two new belts on two new titles at the ballpark. What's the idea behind or the motivation behind bringing in two new belts into the fold?
Well, you know, we have some women trainees, so we needed to get a women's belt in there. Mm-hmm. And women, you know, wrestling is something that, you know, we've tried to do. It's just very hard to get females, mm-hmm. and you know, now we have local females, I guess I should say, because right. I use local talent, so yeah. I don't, there's not a whole lot of local, you know, girls that can, that wrestle, and I'd love to pay somebody $100 or $150 to come in, but we can't afford to do that every right. show, and yeah. so, but now we have local girls that want to do it, so the time was right, and, women wrestling is something I've wanted to add, and a couple of our buddies on Facebook that message about women wrestling are probably going to be pretty happy. But and then the, you know, the No Limits belt, we wanted to do a different belt for a while, you know, just to put something else in the fold, and that was kind of Sam Hunter's baby. He mm-hmm. wanted to do that. He wanted to come up with it, and it was something he wanted to put his stamp on. So, you know, that's kind of how that came. And you know, in the ladder match, I felt like it was good. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, the crowd seemed into it. It was a pretty good match. Scott Phoenix did break his collarbone.
Yeah.
That happened right in front of me. So that was tough to watch. And, you know, you feel bad for Scotty because, you know, he's finally getting to do something singles. He's been in tag matches. Mm-hmm. You know, he's won the tag belts more than Ric Flair won heavyweight titles, and he's had more tag team partners than Kane. And but you know, so he's finally getting to do something single, and then he gets hurt. So we wish him a speedy recovery. But other than that, it was, I feel like it was exactly what it needed to be. It was an entertaining match, and the only thing I wish I could correct was that nobody got hurt.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. Cash Borden, by the way, not even announced for that match, but kind of came in and, for lack of a better word, stole the championship, climbed that ladder after taking Scott Phoenix out, and is now the No Limits champion. And at the time of the show, at that moment, was holding all three singles championships in Stride Pro Wrestling. He is the legacy champion, of course, and at that time was still the heavyweight champion. And we'll get to him in just a moment or two. Now, spurring off of that ladder match, Dexter Roswell challenges Bo Sawyer to a singles match before the baseball action started. And sometimes Dexter Roswell, you know, writes checks that he can't necessarily cash because he was challenging a much bigger, much stronger Bo Sawyer.
Yeah, he the match didn't last very long. He wasn't, I don't know what his deal was. He grabbed the mic and made the challenge. And Bo was happy because Bo was chasing Cash, and he said Cash was a lot better shape than he was. So he was like, I'm glad that he started yelling my name because I couldn't have ran much farther. And then also we got to talk about Axe and Riser. They had a match. Yes, and Axe took a bump on the concrete. I don't know if you saw that.
I did, yes.
He's too old to be doing that.
Yes.
And then Axe bought some beer after the match because it was Dollar Beer Night. And and then it was a pretty good match. You know, Riser's getting better. Mm-hmm. I think working with Axe is helping him a lot in singles, you know, and he's getting more comfortable. You know, that's kind of been, you know, that's really anybody that's a new wrestler, the hardest part of wrestling is interacting with the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't realize that haven't wrestled, as you're seeing now, so much is going on. And you're trying to entertain the crowd as well as remembering spots. And a lot of guys, when they start out, they memorize their matches. Mm-hmm. And when you work against Axe Allward, you're not planning out anything.
Like, he likes to call it in the ring.
You're going to do everything in the ring. So you have to learn to listen. And then he really taught me how to feed off the crowd. And so Riser is starting to understand that by working with Axe. You know, if you plant a bunch of spots and the crowd's not into it, no matter how many spots you hit, they're not going to get back into it. So, and Axe says he's going to talk and he's going to mouth the crowd. So I was very happy with that match. And I know Axe himself loves working with Riser, just absolutely is having a blast
and
with it.
Do you do that by design, though? Because you obviously see some, and I am recognizing, I'm saying obviously a lot, but you see this talent in Riser, athletic ability. You know, he can get in there and work. But then you put him with someone like Axe who can finesse and fine-tune those skills and make him even better. Because you can be the greatest wrestler, you know, most athletic guy in the world, but until you're listening to that crowd or responding accordingly and putting that all those parts together, you're not going to be a complete wrestler, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on your ability to be able to listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you have so many guys that are talented, that are good, and they get to work with, and they, you know, they could think, well, Axe doesn't want to do anything. He doesn't want to hit spots. He doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't, but he wants to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, like I can remember Adam Pearce was messaging me on Facebook one day, and I had him tell it was Red Daniels, mm-hmm. and Adam had told me, do nothing. Mm-hmm. Whenever you think you're not doing something, stop. And then he told, you know, Red that don't do anything.
Yeah.
And now Red as a baby face is like, oh, I get it, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, the less you do, you know, in front of a live crowd. Now, TV and stuff is way different, but in front of a live crowd, the less you do. But the whole point of that is listen to a veteran, you know, or listen to somebody who I listen to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If the Raging Redneck told me something, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to listen.
Right.
And it may not work, it may not be right, but I'm at least going to listen and entertain the idea. And I think in wrestling, that's how you have to succeed, because everybody has different ideas, everybody has different psychology, everybody has different spots they want to do, and you have to be able to listen to each person that you wrestle.
And I'm glad you brought Adam Pearce up, because, and I haven't talked to you about this, but I would like to, in the very near future, dedicate an episode to Adam Pearce, because I know you wrestled him. It was a great match. I was there and was able to call it. And I would like to just kind of learn more about him, because I didn't know a whole lot about him before that. And I know that you still have a relationship with him. So down the road on a future episode, we're definitely want to talk more about Adam Pearce, because I feel like I tweeted him the other day and I feel like he knows who I am because of you. And he made a comment back about you, and I don't remember the specifics of it, but it made me laugh when I saw it. So, you know, taking that break then from the action, going to the ball game, and then coming back to... I think it worked, as you said earlier, having Billy Hills and El Magnifico and Jerry Travelstead and Dexter Roswell and B-Rad and all those guys racing on doing the games on the field, Hargis and Roger Mathis. So it was kind of in their face all night long that Stride Pro Wrestling is here. And I was amazed at the people who came up to me and said, where are you guys out of? You know, I feel like we have a pretty good presence on social media. And we talk about, you know, we have posters up and we do all these fundraisers and whatnot. But it just, there are so many people out there that it just, that don't know what we do or where we are or whatnot. And so, you know, I invited them to come to the facility in Carterville and check it out. But it's, you know, I definitely felt like it was a great night for action. We talked about the women earlier, but Carrie Gold and Zoe Moore, who Zoe is still going through some of the training courses, is that right?
Yeah, she's still training. I think that was her third match in front of a live crowd. Oh, so it was a great learning experience for her, and she's getting better. You know, and I think women's wrestling, it's so hard. It really is. It's so hard to get really good, talented, you know, in this area.
Right.
And I just don't like guys wrestling girls.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we've talked about this before. Go into that. Why are you not a proponent for that?
Well, one, schools aren't going to have it. They're not going to allow it. And
when you say schools, like a fundraiser.
Yeah. And two, you know, it's if two boys get caught wrestling at school, then they're going to get pulled apart and they're going to be told they can't get that. If a boy is wrestling a girl and beating up a girl, it's a completely different, mm-hmm. you know, it is. And I don't want to give that. And also, you know, in this day and age, you know, especially, you know, the way society is now and, you know, it's very documented when a guy hits a girl, and all sports, you know, NFL, NBA, or whatever, they have a firm stance on domestic violence.
Sure.
And you don't know what kids have seen. And kids that come to our shows or families that come to our shows, they may have had a parent that, you know, and I don't want to see I teased it because at the time, Sarah Summers really wanted to wrestle Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And I was considering doing the match. And we actually did a show. It was at the mall, and I'll never forget it. We did a spot where Tony went to super kick Farmer, and he moved, and he hit Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in front of my mom is my witness, and Red Daniels is my witness, I got my ass chewed like 20 minutes by a mom who had brought like five or six kids there. And she chewed on me and said she would not be coming back. And actually, we gave her money back for the show, and they left. And that was all, like, that was it. That's what I needed to know.
Yeah.
A girl was crying. It happened like right in front of her. And I get it that I think Charlotte Flair is the second or third best wrestler on WWE's roster.
Yeah.
I honestly do. And I think she's better than half the guys on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think her and Seth Rollins could have an amazing match,
yeah.
you know, and I really do believe that. But I get that in society, especially the way it is now. On my show, you know, and I've wrestled Zoe Moore in practice, and
yeah.
I, you know, there's nothing wrong with it because we are entertainment,
mm-hmm.
but it's hard to walk that line, especially
it's hard to disconnect
in today.
And yeah, and in this area, and like you said, it's not, you know, some companies do it and they don't have maybe the same kind of repercussions. I mean, this area is very unique in its beliefs and values and whatnot. And, you know, I think it's responsible and good business for you as the owner of a company to listen to your customer feedback. And that one woman spoke out, but you don't know how many others felt the same way and maybe decided they weren't going to come back either. And to listen to that woman's concerns.
Okay.
And we're not missing anything by not having intergender matches, in my opinion, as well. And I tend to agree with you on that viewpoint from the Southern Illinois perspective.
And I mean, and people have said that I don't like women wrestling and I don't want, and I literally have a daughter who, you know,
right.
like my whole life revolves around
exactly.
her and getting
yes.
to do stuff, and I want her to be able to, you know, her dream is to play on the Chicago Cubs. I mean, you walk in and that's what we're watching, you know, mm-hmm. watch. So sure. that's her dream, and she, so to me, I want her to be able to achieve that goal, you know. Mm-hmm. No woman's ever played in the major league, but right. why, but I want her to, and so I get it that the women, you know, that I want her to have those goals and those dreams. I just, in society, I don't know, you know, you just don't want to walk that, you know, that line. Sure. And you know, we make, you know, we make jokes and stuff with Hargis about, you know, race, and, mm-hmm. and we can do that in the locker room and backstage, and there's different, you know, it's just different when you get out in front of a crowd, and you don't, especially being a business owner, I don't want to offend anybody.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And we talked about Zoe Moore. Carrie Gold, by the way, is your new Stride Pro Wrestling women's champion, the very first women's champion. And Carrie's been around, though, has wrestled before. She's not a Stride product, per se, but she is a Southern Illinois wrestling product. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. She's wrestled in Southern Illinois, and she's been around a while, and I've known her for many years, mm-hmm. and when I messaged her about coming in, she was all for it. Yeah. She was, you know, excited from the get-go.
Well, good. We're glad to have her. We'll talk about the heavyweight championship match. Red Daniels getting that rematch against Cash Borden, who won the title at our last show, which also happened to be an outdoor show at the Pulaski County Fair. Cash Borden has a very unique style. I like Cash a lot, but sometimes, you know, he gets that kind of ruthless, hardcore. He doesn't bring all those elements to his matches, but he's definitely got more of an edge and more grit, I think, than anyone else on the roster. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, Cash is just, he's so talented. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have asked or questioned, you know, Cash, why I book him or why he does this, and I think he's so talented. I think he's just, you know, he's unique. He's smooth in the ring. He's, you know, he works the crowd so well.
Yes.
I mean, he just, you know, he just, when you look at him, you know, he as a baby face, he got over, and yeah. the crowd liked him. And then when he's out there as a heel, like, I mean, I watch and he makes me mad, mm-hmm. you know, and I get aggravated at him.
Yeah.
And he's just, but he's business, you know. If you know what that means when you're listening, like he's all business all the time, and he's one of those guys to where if I told him to go out and lose to a broomstick, he would go out and lose to a broom, and he would,
and
like,
it would be an entertaining.
And
style.
he would message me the week heading up to it about ideas he had for wrestling this broomstick, and you know he. People didn't, you know, realize that I had that respect for him or that, you know, like for him. And you know, and he had told me, you know, his idea for Raging Redneck was he wanted him every month to be a different superstar, you know. And, like, I think he said have him be Stone Cold Raging, you know, Redneck or whatever. And he just – but, I mean, all his ideas that he presents are – entertaining, and he's mm-hmm. always thinking of ways to entertain. And you know, at Stridiversary, I mean, he sent me, and he basically wanted to, you know, kill himself in the ring, and I had to rein him in, you know.
Yeah.
And so he was like, you know, we settled on a barbed wire bat, you know, I mean,
right.
And that was calmed down from where it started. I mean, he was like wanting to bring in a dump truck full of tacks, or I mean, just something. It was something yeah. crazy. And
he wrestled Jay Spade, of course, in a dog collar match, which was the first time I had seen one in person. Phenomenal match. And yeah, like you said, probably had to rein him in a little bit, because we've seen some of his other stuff in other companies, and he gets pretty intense with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's people. That's the thing, is people talk about the stuff he does in other in companies or whatever, and he doesn't do that in
right.
ours. And he never has, and he's never even remotely crossed the line or even remotely done anything that has questioned my faith in him. And you know, and him having all the belts, you know, is it doesn't, you know, it, there's nobody else I would rather do it with, because
right.
I mean, because I know he can go out and do anything with any three of those belts and get over and make it entertaining. And that's entertainment is what pays the bills and what brings people in.
And it fits the Cash Borden character that we know. He's that opportunist. He's that kind of sleazy, jack off that you would expect to come steal your girl or, you know, try to take whatever he could get from you. And that's exactly what he did in the opening ladder match when he took the belt, the way he won the heavyweight title from Red Daniels, who eventually went on to regain it. But, you know, Red is obviously, I would say, probably your pride and joy, so to speak, as the first trainee to come through Stride. And really, you've kind of helped to mold and make him into the wrestler he is today, which has, you know, he's learning still, I think, even 3 years in, or just over 3 years into this. But I think anyone, I think you would probably admit that you're even at points learning things about the business that you maybe didn't know before.
I think I pretty much know everything.
I knew that was coming.
But no, you know, Red is, you know, he has such a huge upside because he loves the business and he's intelligent and he, you know, and he loves wrestling. And so he has such a huge upside, you know, and like the one thing that held him back for a long time is, you know, it's something that I think bothered me at first. If you get online and you read people's comments or people say, and it bothers you, and that was Red, what people said about him in the locker room or on social media or at the shows, if they what they say about you bothers you, then this isn't a business for you. Right. And I learned that, you know, people crapped on me and hated me for a long time. Yeah. And you have to realize that you're not going to make everybody happy, and not everybody's going to cheer for you, not everybody's going to like you. Everybody in the locker room is going to like you. People are going to be jealous. They're going to question why you're at this spot. And, you know, and as Red has matured, he's gotten over that. And he's just went out and worked and not, you know, you have to have that mentality. And you can't worry if somebody thinks, you know, on Facebook that you're terrible or that your spot looks stupid. And you're not going to please everybody. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, when we put together our match, I changed it throughout the week because I had time to sit back and think about it. A lot of times, you don't have that week to sit back and think about it. You have 3 minutes to put a match together, or you have, you know, I mean, how many times has Chris Hargis shown up 10 minutes before his match? You know, so you don't have that time. So we're all not perfect, and you know, the WWEs and the ROH, all these companies, they have that luxury where they can put stuff together, or they know what they're going to do hours or weeks before. You know, we don't have that luxury on the indie scene. So your matches are going to be messed up. You're going to screw up, and spots are not going to look good. But with Red, he's finally overcame that. He's finally, you know, he's working out. He's trying to get in better shape to where, you know, he can handle, you know, matches. And wrestling 6 to 8 minutes is so much different than wrestling 18 to 20. And so, you know, and starting out, when you start getting up to that 12, 15, 18, 20-minute time, it's you don't realize how different it is and how your cardio has to be better and how you have to sell more and have more moves in your arsenal. And there's just a lot. And he's learning it. And, you know, and I've stuck him with Mike Masters or Cash or Axe or guys that he can do that with. And, you know, going from wrestling Riser, who's also a trainee, to here you go, you're in the main event against, you know, even me, you know. And so, you know, he's come a long way, and I'm very happy, and I'm pleased with what he's done.
So, okay, the last match that we're going to talk about is our match, and I have many questions, and I many years ago in 2012, back in the AAPW days, I did a match with Mike Masters, and I at that point
you
I did
yourself
not
yourself over Jesus Christ.
I did not want to do the match because this was coming off the heels of WrestleMania, whatever it was, the one in Atlanta where Michael Cole and Chad is here. He just gave me the hand signal 27. It was Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. And Chad and I both criticized the angle because it was an announcer getting involved, yada, yada, yada. So fast forward to that spring when AAPW is being born, and Chris Hagstrom, who was kind of running AAPW at the time, and Golden Boy was the booker, and they presented the idea to me. This was after you guys were on the news with us, and I hit Masters with the chair, they explained, you know, why they wanted to do it. And, you know, it made sense that because we were airing the show on the TV station that I was working at, it kind of gave that tie-in and that connection. And so I reluctantly did it. Fast forward then, you know, we did the match. I loved it, but I knew that I was never going to be a professional wrestler. I was 30, almost 39 years old at that point. Fast forward to Stride, and you always, because sometimes I think you're ribbing me, and sometimes I don't know when you're bullshitting me and when you're actually being serious. So you said, I'm going to have you wrestle, I'll say it here, Farmer Billy Hills. And so we did a little angle, and he shoved me in the ring, and it was going to eventually lead to a match, but Farmer ended up getting hurt and was out for quite some time. So then you pivot and tell me that it's going to be Roger. And I'm like, no, like, Roger to me is like the most intimidating, even talking, you know, I am finally to the point now where I've hung out with him socially a few times and I can talk to him and not be petrified.
You know what words come into mind?
Yes. Is it pussy by any chance?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yes. So, so we did it and I thought, okay, we're done here. And then, like you said, this was months and months and months ago, you come up with the idea for the tag team match before Spade and Flood were even a tag team. And I, every time you propose these things, I always think the guys don't want to work with me because, one, I'm greener than goose shit and I don't know how to work. And two, I do think, and, you know, who wants to put over a middle-aged
news anchor
or ring announcer at this point? And, you know, Tony, and I'll be honest with you when I say this, working with you and Tony and Jay, probably the three, you know, I couldn't have picked three guys that I would have felt safer in the ring with. Because I knew they weren't going to hurt me, and I knew you weren't going to let anything happen, but it's like, what if I screw something up? And I did screw up a couple of the spots, but I mean, what do you, did you, and be honest, have you faced any criticism with putting me in some of these matches?
No, not at all. Okay. Like when I called Roger right away, you know, and, you know, that was probably, you know, with Roger, you know, he's intimidating. And mm-hmm. I mean, the first time I wrestled him was in Chicago or South Bend. And
is that when you guys went up to Hex?
Yeah, I never wrestled him before. Okay. And I always liked him personally because I'd hung out with him personally. We worked out together. But in my mind, when I wrestled him, I was like, if I piss this guy off and he decides to kick my ass, there's nothing I'm going to be able to do to stop it.
Yeah.
And I will say that starting out with Roger, like, he's never – I don't think he'd ever really worked a whole lot of storytelling mm-hmm. type of stuff. And he's a legit badass in real life yeah. and did MMA and fought. And so – getting him, you know, he had a lot of bad influences from people, you know, telling him different things, and he was more concerned over the Jay Spade gimmick before he was with. And but I think had he not done the Jay Spade thing, he might not have been as welcoming to mm-hmm. it, because, you know, in Roger's mind, and granted, he's right, if I fought this guy, I would beat the shit out of him.
Right,
you know,
right.
if he fought me and Spade at the same time, he'd beat the shit out of us.
Yeah.
So, but getting him to understand, you know, in my mind, and I could be completely wrong, if Roger's the monster of our company, and that's the way I've built him, and that's mm-hmm. the way he's been built, whoever he wrestles and loses to, he's no longer the monster, the mm-hmm. bad, that guy now is.
Right.
You know, he's been slain. So, you know, how do you protect that? Well, then we tell an underdog story.
Yeah.
You know, Spade's not going to be a monster or a badass. He's going to be an underdog. So coming off of that story, he wanted to do – I think then he really got into the storytelling.
Yeah.
He wanted to tell stories, and he wanted to develop a character and do different things. And so as soon as I called him, he was like, hell yeah, like, let's do it. And but I explained we were gonna, and he really liked working Cash, and mm-hmm. he really enjoyed that Cash story. And I told him we were gonna continue that and get to you. And I told him, you know, we were gonna kill your daughter, and, and we were gonna get shit on the internet for it. And you know, and anyway, we he was really into it and he really enjoyed it. And no, he had no whatever. And like I said, I had originally, before I even told you, I had called Tony and I called him in January and mm-hmm. I said, here's what I want to do. And I laid it all out through August. Mm-hmm. And, but at the time I had thought, we were going to do, my plan was originally for Jamie's show. For it to be me and you. And I knew it was going to be around, she told me in September. Mm-hmm. So I had laid it out for us. And Tony was like, oh my God, that's awesome. Like, that's great. And then I called Spade and I told him, I need you to wear a mask. I want you to turn heel. And this is the story I want to tell. And I didn't tell them till later. But I was like, it's going to be for the tag titles. And so they really, I don't think they had knew that originally. Mm-hmm. And then when I told you, but again, like I really do. I like to screw with you. So I kept telling you, but I didn't tell you. I think, God, it was probably like what in July you were asking me, are we really doing this? Are we like, is this really happening?
Well, because Chad's going to fly in and I'm like, you know, I don't want him to fly all the way here. And then it's like, oh yeah, I'm just kidding. It's going to be me and Phoenix or, you know, whatever. You and Phoenix going for the gold or whatever. So yeah.
But no, I had there was no negative feedback. They were like, you know, very excited. You know, there's, you know, Spade, obviously, and me are really good friends. We're mm-hmm. really close. Tony, like you said, we work so well together. We click in the ring. And then me and Spade have never had a bad match either. So yeah. I knew, knowing them, that we could put it together and make it work. You know, and granted, you know, it would have been cooler to stretch it out longer, to tease you longer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're so old now, so we didn't know if you'd still be alive long enough to,
that's a good point.
To get to the match. But, no, I mean, I've had no negative feedback from it. I've had nobody's really said anything. I mean, you're beloved by our fans You know, I mean, that was a humongous pop when you took off the jacket and, you know, was going to come save me. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, it all worked out, you know, the way that, you know, I had envisioned. And, you know, I told you backstage, you know, hopefully this is what they do.
Right.
You know, if they don't, I'm going to kick you in the balls and tombstone you, you know. So, you know, if it doesn't work, then I'm just going to turn heel. So
and then where does that kind of perspective come from, or that perception? Because I think that you, and again, here's the part where I, you know, inflate the ego, but I think that there are some bookers out there or some promoters out there that have a story in their mind and that's the way they're going to go. But I feel like you pivot and had that crowd not responded the way you knew how they were going to respond, and you didn't have to pivot, but I feel like you had a card in your back pocket in case you had to play it.
Well, I think that comes a lot with when I wrestle, I listen to the crowd. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way I've always, if I have 12 spots planned and after four, the crowd is dead, like, you know, guys that I wrestle tell you, like, let's go home. Like, mm-hmm. we're not going to bring them back. So I think with booking, I always, you know, try to keep something, and I always have a million different things going. And, you know, I mean, like Elijah breaking his collarbone messed up three shows. So, you know, I got to pivot and I got to go somewhere else. So in a match when stuff happens, you know, we did a tag match and it was me and Elijah versus, you know, Roger and I don't remember who his tag partner was now.
Was it Dalton?
Yeah. And we were going to do something and Elijah got hurt in the match.
Oh,
he landed.
Yeah.
And so, I improvised in the ring and changed the whole match. Everything we had planned, I changed it all.
Yeah.
And Roger looked at me. He's like, what are we doing, boss? And I told him Elijah was hurt. He's like, oh. And I said, we're going to, and I just said, new game plan. And we did this. And so he just said, and Roger said, he's like, just tell me what to do. And so we completely redirected the whole match until the ref came over and said, Elijah's good. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, having that always, you know, when I'm in the ring, I slow down. Mm-hmm. And when I'm backstage or when I'm telling a story, if somebody calls me with an idea, you know, literally Riser is messaging me right now about, mm-hmm. I try to read what they want to do, and then I think, and then I'll call the person and be like, hey, they're wanting to do this. What do you think?
So you don't react right away to someone when they send you a proposal or an idea.
Never.
That's good. That's smart.
I never, I never do. You know, there's been people come up to me the day of a show and say, hey, I want to do this instead. And I'll just tell them, no, mm-hmm. you know, you should have told me before.
Right.
I'm not going to change it today. This isn't going to work. And, you know, it was, you know, I think the day of Battle Bowl, I had like two different guys want to change and do something else. And yeah. I'm like, we can't, you know, like we've already done this Battle Bowl. We've already done this to go a different direction. We can't change it now. It's too late.
So was it challenging though with our match? Because obviously I'm not experienced enough to call something as we go. So we did have a plan. And we stayed pretty much on that plan. I mean, obviously, there were a couple things that I kind of delayed or whatever. But is it harder for you to kind of go back to that mindset of where you're laying everything out? Because then you're also having to remember. Or, I mean, the fans don't necessarily know what we're doing. So we can kind of fluctuate or turn and go a different path if we have to. But do you find that to be a challenge or not?
No, I mean, my mom has always swore that I have a photographic memory. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you think about it, I'm really good at remembering spots. And mm-hmm. so me and Tony did a 2 out of 3 falls where we met and practiced. But on that same show, we had 2 different teacher matches with 12 people in one, and then 12 in another.
Yeah.
And I put together both of those matches, spot after spot.
Yeah.
And I ref those matches so that way I could tell them the spot.
Right.
And I remembered everything, and then I remember my own matches. Mm-hmm. So that's why I get – my trainees will tell you, when I'm there, it's not good because I scream at them. I'm mm-hmm. like, you can't remember 2 spots in a row, and I can remember 100.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so, I mean, I could tell you right now, Ace Hawkins come back. Or Ace, mm-hmm. you know, Ace Hawkins is shine, and I remember it, and I – and you know, and no matter who I wrestle, I know what they want to do, and I can remember it. And so, you know, putting our match together, it's like, okay, like, you know, obviously if we're wrestling 2 other people, if we're wrestling, you know, Red Daniels and Justice, I'm not going to give you a choke slam and an mm-hmm. FU to hit him with, you
right,
know, so
right.
it's going to depend. And you know, like, I knew people didn't, you know, people legit didn't think we were going to win.
Right.
And so I wanted to give a lot of falsies, but I wanted the falsies to be on me because mm-hmm. they knew you weren't going to kick out and they knew you weren't going to take the pin because mm-hmm. you're a mark and you're undefeated and you've like, that was your stipulation for being a tag team, that you couldn't be pinned. And so, but I, you know, so I, the way I laid it out and, you know, and I changed some stuff, and I'm very particular, and I wanted the falsies mm-hmm. for people to be involved and them to think. And, you know, one of my friends, Craig, who brings his son, like, they come to almost all our shows, and he messaged me and said it was his favorite match at Stride.
Oh, nice.
And so, you know, and I, you know, messaged back, and I was like, you know, even with Kevin, you know, but, I mean, he didn't think we were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised at so many people that didn't think we were going to win and didn't want to know.
Right.
You know, everybody wanted to be surprised that night. And that's what was, you know, what was fun to me.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, Brandon Toll and you know, he had a lot of fun doing it, and he's been all over the place and WWE Network, so that was cool to have mm-hmm. him there and have him ref. And you know, and anytime you're in with somebody at that level, like, it is a different feeling.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like if you wrestle somebody who was on WWE or, you know, on a big time promotion, the way they wrestle and the way they conduct themselves in the ring, you forget how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes me think, like, God, I'm not good, you know, because they're so much better.
And, you know, it's no rest for the wicked as Stride is returning this Saturday night, September 7th, at the Stride Building on 1130 North Division Street in Carterville. Bell time is 6:30 for Stride Pro Wrestling Presents Revenge. Several rematches, including the Cash Borden versus Red Daniels for the heavyweight title. Heath and I will be teaming up once again, taking on Jay Spade and Tony Flood.
You're a full-time wrestler now.
Well, apparently. Do we have an announcer for that night?
I don't know. We'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out. So come on out. You can check out StrideProWrestling.com and also get the live video from the match that Heath and I won those tag team championships. Now, I want to start something new here every week on My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, Three for the Road, as we wrap up each episode. And since we talked about some tag team wrestling here, I want to know who Heath's three favorite tag teams of all time, besides the two of us, of course. Who are your three favorite tag teams?
That was tough, really. My number one is the New Age Outlaws.
Really? I was going to guess the Steiners for you.
No, mine was the New Age Outlaws, and it was because that was prime.
Yeah.
Man, like 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And so, you weren't cool if you didn't say, oh, you didn't know.
Let me ask you about them, because I remember, because I'm about 10 years older than, actually more than 10 years older than you. So I was, in my 20s when the New Age Outlaws formed. And I remember it being the guy from the Smoking Guns, who then they turned into Rockabilly, and Jeff Jarrett's roadie. And I thought it was the most mismatched tag team combination of all time, because it's two guys that you would have never expected to work together, and they turned into one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
Yeah, they were cool. So mm-hmm. when I was a kid, they were cool, and the DX thing was, the suck it thing was you weren't cool if you didn't tell somebody to suck it. So they were just cool, and I mean, I think it was more, for me, it was more the introduction, the catchphrase, and Enzo and Cash. Like, that's who they reminded me of, mm-hmm. Because Enzo was always, mouthing
yeah.
on. And so that's had a cool introduction, and, that's, I would scream, tag team,
Yeah.
And so, that was, but for me, yeah, they were a definite number one. My number two, it's kind of, I guess, a two-way tie between Edge and Christian and the Dudley Boys. I've always been actually a huge Edge fan.
Mm-hmm.
So Edge and Christian I enjoyed them. The Dudley Boys, again, they were in that where I was younger and mm-hmm. that cool. And I mean, everybody hit the 3D. I think me and you hit the 3D on somebody one time.
Yeah.
And so they were cool. And they were legit tag teams.
Yeah.
And then my third favorite, and I know they're not a legit tag team, but I can remember, how excited I was, and that was the Rock and Sock Connection.
Oh, okay.
I know they're not. I mean, I obviously, when I was younger, I can remember, the Rockers and my dad taking me to Evansville to a show. Mm. And Marty Jannetty gave me a high five. And I thought that was the coolest thing
yeah.
in the world. So, and then I like tag teams. Like, I really like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash
mm-hmm.
because they were cool. So
yeah.
I remember all the teams that I thought were cool. Now, would I go back and watch some of them and learn how mm-hmm. to be an awesome tag? Probably not.
Right.
But I remember, just in my thinking back, like they were cool. And then even now, I like. Like what the Young Bucks do, and I like the style now where it is. I feel like with tag team wrestling, it's always a shine, then a heat, a hot tag, and then a go home. And
mm-hmm.
It's always going to be that way, but it seems like a lot of the indie style now is not necessarily that way. And so it's neat to watch, and the falsies are a lot cooler when you do more of a waterfall or a free-for-all. And that's kind of how I tried to do our match.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little heat, and then we didn't really do a hot tag.
Yeah.
And that's kind of – I like it better that way.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. For me, British Bulldogs, my all-time favorite. Edge and Christian are actually number two for me. And then I debated between Demolition and the Midnight Express for number three for me. I grew up 10 years – before Heath was really into watching wrestling too. So, my tag teams are obviously more 80s and mid 90s based, but yeah, Demolition would definitely be my number three. And tag team wrestling is always so good though. And I like, cause you mentioned that cohesiveness, and now we've got Seth Rollins and
Braun Strowman as the WWE Tag Team Champions. I don't necessarily like when they put those kind of makeshift and the way in stride even, you know, when Tony and Jay formed, you know, they had gone from rivals to now. They are such a cohesive unit, and the way they work together and they work to make those double team efforts, you know, like a Midnight Express or like a Rock and Roll Express would do back in the day with the double kicks and, you know, kind of the things that they do. It just, to me, it works, and I like more, you know, obviously cohesive teams. And I mean, you and I are obviously buddies, but obviously, you know, I'm not in this for the long haul, as my knee and elbow and shoulder are aching as we record this.
I mean, I'm like you when it comes to tag team. I mean, I like the Rock and Sock connection, like I said, but I, you know, I feel bad for guys like the Revival or the Uso or the New Day, you know, legit tag team that try and have matching, you know, gear, and they try, and then you have somebody come in and do that. I mean, I guess there's a long time story with it where you're, you know, but, you know, I feel like tag team should be a tag team, you know, and it should be its own separate entity, you know, and so, but, you know, it depends on the story. And I think that's what's missing right now in wrestling is the stories and the long-term thought process of a story. So hopefully it turns into something, you know, like, you know, we saw Braun Strowman and Nicholas you know, win the tag title. I mean, so, but I mean, I think they try to do stuff that's entertaining, you know. I think they tried to do the Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch angle and they got a lot of heat for it. People didn't really like it.
Yeah.
And so they've kind of transitioned out of that. And so maybe this is their way to get out of it, maybe. And I don't think they really know what to do with Braun Strowman. It's like they struggle with him. They don't know what to do with him or where to put him. And that's, you know, that's tough whenever, you know, because he's getting better and he is a fan favorite, but he's so big and so, you know, I think it's just, what do you do with him? Where do you put him? Yeah. Who do you put him against? And, you know, and so we'll see. But, yeah, I'm like you. I'm not a huge fan when they just throw people together without a build. You know, I remember when Kane and X-Pac won the tag, there was a build to it.
Sure.
And they told a really cool story, and it was really neat. And they weren't a tag team. Or even Kane and Daniel Bryan. When they, you know, so I like that when they tell a long-term story with it.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it earlier, that storytelling is such an important element, and again, the stories are continuing with Stride Pro Wrestling this Saturday night. It is September 7th at the building in Carterville, and then on Saturday, September 14th, just a week after that, it is Cashing In, and it is happening in Centralia at the junior high or at the...
It's at the junior high, yeah.
And this is a fundraiser for our friend Jamie Woodworth, who is working with her youth build program, and so we're looking forward to that. So two big matches or two big shows coming up again on Saturday, September 14th, as well as Saturday, September 7th, which is just later this week. So friends, thanks so much once again for tuning in to Two is Greater Than One right here with My 1-2-3 Cents, and we'll talk again next week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.